Greetings and welcome to the Dynamics of Colorism with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth. You may call in to share your experiences, colorism, to pose a question, or just to give a general comment. You may do so by dialing area code 914-338-1308. And now, to begin our show, here's Dr. Culbreth. Greetings and welcome to the Dynamics of Colorism for Thursday, February 28th, 2013. I am your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth, and I'm coming to you live from Windsor Mill, Maryland, where the Dynamics of Colorism will be coming to you every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Good evening, everyone. Tonight, we have a great show. We're going to discuss colorism, black women, and self-esteem. Our guests tonight are Ms. Raquel Mack and Ms. Naima Valier. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guests. Both of them are extremely strong black women who actually represent the change needed in this world. And first, I'd like to commend the both of my guests for taking issues that really need to be addressed that actually affect black Americans. But I wanted to say also that too often, everyone, we see issues, we complain about them, we discuss with our friends and family members, and that's the extent of the action taken. We don't go any further than that. With my two guests tonight, I call them both activists because they're taking a stand on issues that are really serious issues that really need to be discussed, addressed, within our community and outside of our community. Our first guest is Ms. Naima Valier. She's a singer, songwriter, and activist. She's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She's actually starting a nonprofit organization named the Sankofa Heritage Film Foundation, and that's geared toward raising funds to help black people who are black filmmakers, rather, who want to make stories that show black people as complex humans as they can be, and to tell their stories that are historic and that they're accurate. She's credited with starting the petition about the Nina Simone issue in that movie, where in the casting of a light complexion, I believe, biracial woman to play the role of Miss Simone. Our second guest is Miss Raquel Mack. She said she's a real activist, but she's going to be a diehard activist. And a mom from Santa Rosa, California. And she actually started a petition against the Etsy company for selling racist products. And because of her activism, it led to the NAACP getting involved. She's tried to communicate with this company. The Jim Crow Museum staff also commented on this, as well as others in support of Ms. Mack's efforts to really make a difference. And there's been articles written about her efforts on the Internet as well. Good evening, ladies. How are you tonight?
We're doing well. Thank you very much.
Fine. Thank you.
Good. I'm so glad and excited that you both could be a part of this show, because I think with both of your causes that you're bringing out to the public's attention, they fit directly in with what we're going to talk about, our show topic on black women and self-esteem and colorism issues. Now, before I begin the show, what I wanted to do was make note of an incident that occurred last week during the show, in which we had a call from the good old boys from down in Biloxi, Mississippi, where they called into the show and they proceeded to want to yell racial slurs during my show. And I do apologize to my listeners for even having to hear that. But what I wanted to make note of is that obviously they must have forgotten that this is 2013. It is not 1930s, it's not the 30s, 40s, 50s, or 60s, and those tactics just do not work with me or any other self-respecting person in 2013. I have zero tolerance for ignorance. I have zero tolerance for racism. So So my point to those of you who do not like this show, if you don't like it, you don't like the topics, you don't want to hear my voice, then it's simple. You just don't listen to the show. You make the decision that you're not going to listen, and that's not rocket science to do. Because you will not deter, nor will you stop me from continuing with this show or my efforts. And having said that, I'm placing everyone on notice that if you do decide to call my show in any attempt to disrupt it or to be ignorant with racial slurs or whatever, note that I will report you to the FBI, just as I did with the incident last week. I reported that to the FBI, as well as the telephone service provider, CSPIRE. So what you need to understand is that I'm not the one to play games with. At the end of the day, when all is said and done, when you call this show, even if you block your numbers are logged in the system, and it creates a record. So use your common sense, and I'll repeat myself. If you don't like my show, don't listen to it. And having said that, listeners, we're going to proceed with our show tonight in business as usual. We're going to have a great discussion on colorism, black women, and self-esteem. And before we even get into the discussion, what I wanted to just say is that when we start looking at thinking and talking about colorism, you know, it is a distinction that's based on your skin tone. And colorism is really complex in nature because it also includes, you know, phenotype issues. So we're talking about the hair texture, the skin color, the facial features, the nose, eyes, and lips. So colorism is, by its very nature, it's insidious, and it damages people of color psychologically, and sometimes it leads to physical alterations and appearances in order to fit this, what I call the European phenotype ideology. Now, historically, due to racist ideologies and white supremacy, light skin was valued over dark skin. This is evident if you go back and you listen to my prior shows. We basically went through and talked about the historical perspectives and origins of colorism. And what happened was that colorism actually became even more insidious when higher values were placed on people of color who not only just possessed the light skin, but they possessed the European phenotypes, you know, with the hair, the nose, the lips, et cetera. Now, historically, we all know that there was a belief that this European phenotype, and when we say that, and I have to make sure I'm very, very clear, when I'm referring to the white skin, light skin, or light skin that is in close proximity to whiteness, the narrow nose, thin lips, and straight hair, that was considered the ideal. And anyone who possessed the Afrocentric phenotypes, whereas we have the darkest skin, maybe a wider nose, lips may have been thicker, hair may be kinky, that was always considered less favorable. And people possessing those phenotypes were treated, you know, disparately. What happened was black Americans began to internalize racism and the belief in these European phenotypes as being the ideal look, and they began practicing it within their own race. Now, my point in going back over all of that brief historical information is that because right now, at this point in time, the conversation that black America should be having now is the fact that colorism is affecting our community. We need to be having a conversation that also includes why it continues to be an issue that continues to separate and divide. We should also include how we can work united to eradicate colorism within the black community, as well as other communities where people of color are affected. So that is my whole point. And ladies, I look forward to you having a great discussion with you tonight. But before we actually get into looking at the issues that you got both are focusing in on as activists, when we start talking about how colorism affects black women, it appears to be, and this is based on studies, books that have been written, that when people are, especially darker complexion people, when they're affected by colorism, you know, it's a twofold issue. One, they get the rejection from the dominant society, and then two, they're rejected within their own racial group.
Yeah.
And which is really sad, because during a prior show with Dr. Ronald Hall, we discussed how colorism has actually led women to bleach their skin lighter. Mm-hmm. And that's a big issue that we're dealing with now, basically all over the country, globally. And they also suffer from what Dr. Hall identified as the bleaching syndrome, in which they try to remove any identifiable characteristic of blackness from them.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, it's really interesting, because there's a study conducted by Pearson Trommel in 2010, and in the findings of her study, it came back and it said that, it basically implies, let me put it that way, that the impact of colorism on dark-skinned African-American women's self-esteem is damaging and it's traumatic. And it also found out that colorism can be a contributing factor to other psychological disorders, such as depression, suicidal issues, and ostracism. So when we start considering self-esteem issues and the effects of colorism on the self-esteem for women of color, it's not just darker complexion women, but medium and lighter complexion women also could possibly go through these issues. So we have to consider and keep in mind that, look at the items that are being marketed out, whether it's, we're looking at dolls, we're looking at bleaching creams, we're looking at magazines or what is considered the ideal beautiful, what's considered beautiful rather, or attractive. We have to also consider and look at all of these items that are believed to represent black Americans. For example, ladies, a few months ago, that company manufactured dolls after the movie Django. Did you remember hearing about that?
Yeah, I do.
I vaguely remember hearing about, like, an action figure.
Right, and then when people, there was such an outcry, an outrage, because of the negative association of the dolls to slavery and black mm-hmm. America. Those dolls were instantly discontinued. They stopped them. Now, what gets me is that when we claim to be in a post-racial society, we're seeing movies like The Help, The Django. I believe movies of that nature, or these dolls, or any type of little, what they want to call, I guess, memorabilia, it should make people of color question, why are we seeing movies and items like this being made in the millennium? But yet no one has thought about questioning why movies of this nature are being made at all. So I'm wondering, is it possible that the goal is to ultimately affect the self-esteem of people of color? And that's just, you know, interesting question that we can think about, because whether it's a movie, novelty items, dolls, any item that is marketed that represents negativity of a racial group, or attempts to associate items of that nature with a racial group, I consider that being negative. And it becomes an issue that must be addressed. And that leads us into talking to Ms. Mack about the issue with Etsy and this, how do you pronounce it, the Gollywog doll?
Yes.
Tell us, why did you become in the Etsy doll issue?
What had happened, in short, these dolls are caricatures. And as we know, caricatures exist to reduce a subject, usually a person, down to a group of stereotypical characteristics that one can apply to that group of people or that person. Mm-hmm. And what the Gollywog doll is essentially a caricature of a caricature. The Gollywog caricature, which originated here in the U.S. somewhere in the mid to late 1800s, is an anti-black caricature that is characterized by jet black skin, bulging white rimmed eyes, very large red lips, unruly frizzy black hair, and he wears a bow tie and tails. And and that is really the costume of a minstrel character. So that's why I say it's a caricature of a
right.
black person. When I was on Etsy, I came across, I think I was looking for dolls, or I'm not even really sure how it popped up, but Etsy is a e-commerce website that allows people who make their own crafts to sell it on that site. It's a platform to allow people to sort of exchange. So, you know, when you're searching for things, there are all number of things that could possibly pop up there. And that is one of the things that popped up. And when I went to go look further into it, there were over 100 of these Gollywog and Gollywog-like items. And I'm not even talking about the Black Americana items that they sell on there that are, you know, lawn jockeys and mammies and all of this stuff that aren't even vintage necessarily, but are handmade to order today. The history, the reason why I think people in this country don't really have a very good idea about what the Gollywog caricature is because the doll was owned by a woman in this country in the 1800s, mid to late 1800s, named Florence Kate Upton. And she was the daughter of English parents who, and she spent some of her childhood in the U.S., later moved to the U.K. and illustrated this rag doll that she had had as a child here in the U.S., now making it popular in the U.K. and then eventually all across, you know, Europe and into Australia and other places as well. And so I think that's why we don't have really a good idea about what the Gollywog caricature means to us in this country. However, if you were to see one, you would understand, if you had any historical context whatsoever to apply it to, how ugly the character is.
Right. And they were considered, like, really evil and bad, weren't they?
They were considered, that in fact, I can quote you, in the first book that the Gollywog appeared in, Two Dutch Dolls, in it, the Gollywog doll is described as a horrid sight, the blackest gnome. He didn't even have hands, he had paws, and so he was not a human being, but he was black, and he was mischievous, and he did horrible things, and he was thought to be very, very ugly.
Right.
And ill-mannered, yeah.
And that's kind of like the same association they've had with with blackness. Margaret Hunter, I think in 2002, noted in one of her articles that she wrote that the description of black, anything to do with blackness or black skin, was always considered as being ugly, violent, other than the inferior, and just bad or dirty.
Subhuman.
Right, exactly, subhuman. So you can see how that connection goes there. Now, let me ask you, what message do these dolls actually send to black Americans relative to skin color today in 2013?
Right. Yes. Well, in my opinion, the message that they send to black people, not just in America, obviously, but around the world, is that their features, those features that make us different from the dominant population, that European phenotype that you were speaking of earlier,
mm-hmm.
It makes us nothing more than fodder for ridicule. And it says that black people are ugly, untamed, but most of all that they're subhuman. And I think that's the goal of any caricature of a person. So whether it be Asian, Hispanic, Native American caricature, the goal is always the same, to reinforce their inhumanity. And then all the inequity is just justified. So when I say that, I mean all of the inequity that we have experienced as a black people in this country, I only can speak from this country, I don't know about other countries necessarily, but all of the inequities that we've suffered in the past and in the present today, due to there never being an even playing field, are justified when you make blackness inherently bad.
Exactly.
And so that is the most destructive part about this Gollywog doll being not just sold, but sold on at a company that says that they don't sell things that are racist or offensive or demeaning to people. And for that to not sort of go into that group of things and for them to not take any action about it, it says to me very clearly that we're not considered people, that we're not considered part of that, that group that's supposed to be protected. And so that's sort of where my, and when I say I'm a reluctant activist, it's because I really thought that when I brought this issue to the attention of Etsy, the Etsy integrity, marketplace integrity team, I really thought they would say, take a look at the pictures of the items that they had on their website and say, oh my gosh, that's not acceptable. That's clearly, it's clearly offensive. It's clearly dehumanizing. And it's clearly in violation of our do's and don'ts. And we're going to take them down, or we're going to have the crafter or the person who's, who owns the shop take these down immediately. Nothing like that has happened. And so that has sort of caused me to not be able to give up, not be able to step away from it, and continue on and continue to draw attention to it, because to me, it's like a slap in the face.
It is, right. I see that. Now, what is their policy on items of nature?
Their policy, and I can sort of, it's kind of a long thing that they have in their policy section, but in short, it says there are some types of items that we don't allow in Etsy's marketplace, even if they are legal and otherwise meet Etsy's selling criteria. Some things just aren't in the spirit of Etsy. The following types of items may not be listed on Etsy, and it goes on to say, alcohol, tobacco, and other smokable products, drugs, medical drugs, blah, blah, blah. Live animals, all the stuff, pornography, firearms. And it also says items that promote, support, or glorify hatred toward others or otherwise demean people based upon race, ethnicity, religion, gender, gender identity, disability, or sexual orientation, including items or content that promote organizations with such views. So, in my opinion, a Gollywog doll, a caricature of a black person, an ugly caricature at that, would fit under this policy.
I see that it does. Now, have you contacted the actual company, like in writing? And
are you talking about Etsy, or are you talking about the people who sell?
No, about just Etsy, because of their sites.
Yes, I have contacted Etsy's. It's difficult when you're talking to a website because while they do have an actual headquarters in Brooklyn, they're not very easily accessible. But yes, I've gone back and forth via email with them when I first started bringing this to their attention, and I would get pretty much the same response that the NAACP did in San Francisco when they tried to contact them, which essentially says, thank you for bringing this to our attention. We can't tell you what we talk to our sellers about. We can't tell you what happens. We can't tell you what we're going to do about it. But thanks for flagging the item and thanks for letting us know. And when I first got the message that was like that from them, I thought that they were actually going to do something about it. They didn't do something about it, and so it's become very clear to me that that's just their stock answer for everything. And it's the same thing that they've told, you know, reporters who are trying to do stories on it and whatnot. So that's their stock answer, and really they don't have to legally do anything. But as a company that prides themselves on being accepting of all people and not wanting to disparage people, and not also not wanting to limit their, you know, their base, it seems to me it would be sort of silly not to, you know, take care of it. This seems to be, you know, their blanket, their stock answer to this problem.
Well, I noticed that in an article that was written, I think it was on Common SharePoint by Janet, I can't pronounce her last name, she's a reporter. She noted in her article also about the same issue that the NAACP's, the response that the NAACP received was that, let's see, that their whole position basically is that our members come from, this is in quote, from all walks of life and may hold differing opinions
right.
of legitimate collectability of certain types of historical items. Did the NAACP, do you know if they ever went back after them about this issue?
No, they didn't go back after them about it.
They let it go. Now, what other action have you taken with this issue?
Well, I started the petition. I've reached out, I've tried to reach out to people, influential people, who might be able to help me bring more attention to the issue. I've had Eddie Izzard bring attention to it, and that generated a lot of signatures for me. Margaret Atwood, the author, has done that. I've had Naomi Campbell draw attention to the petition for me. That generated some signatures as well. So it's really just been, it's been more about sort of virtually knocking on people's doors and saying, can you help me, please, because I don't have the visibility that you do, and I need to use your visibility to bring attention to this issue. And it's difficult to explain to people how important it is if they don't really get it right off the bat, because to them what it sounds like is, wait, so you don't want them to sell these dolls, but they're not dolls, and they're harmful, and they're against the policies of Etsy. And so when they finally understand that, that sort of helped helped bring this issue to light. But really, mostly it's been people writing articles, people retweeting the people of influence retweeting the petition, and myself just asking people to take a look and telling them why this is wrong.
Well, you know, and let me ask you this also. I mean, and I see the issue here, because it is, if your policy says you don't sell things that represent hate, especially toward other racial groups, but you're allowing items to be sold on your site
right.
that do just that, then, you know, it is an issue. But what outcome are you anticipating with this, with the petition?
I don't have any real clear idea. I don't have any expectations one way or the other. This petition ended today, and it is automatically sent over to the CEO and the person who heads the press issues over there at Etsy.
Wow.
We're in New York, and you know, if they choose to respond to me, I mean, they don't have to respond to me, but if they choose to respond to me, I have absolutely no idea what's going to be in that response. It could very well, and actually my expectation, if you really want to know the truth, is that they're just going to tell me the same thing that they told the NAACP and not do anything about it. And at that point, I'm not really sure what the next step would be. I'm just hoping that they're able to sort of see the error of their way and make the correct changes.
You know, and I just find, what I find amazing is that when it's issues involving racism, and it just seems like so much lately, especially after we've elected, you know, President Obama was elected for the first term, and then now with the second term, we're seeing so many issues involving racism, where it's just kind of blatant.
Well, it is very blatant, and what I think it is that, you know, people are getting scared now. Things are changing in a very rapid way.
They are.
And it makes people very uncomfortable. Imagine how it would feel for you if you've been on top forever. I mean, forever, since before you can remember, since before, it may as well be before time ever started, you know. And all of a sudden, things are starting to pick up pace and momentum. And it's very, very threatening to people, even people who would consider themselves not to be racist, even people who would consider themselves to be liberal and progressive. You know, the dismissive nature of some people is astonishing to me sometimes.
It is.
To dismiss people who have very serious claims about racism, about inequities that are happening to them and to their brethren, it's very sad. It's very sad to see. But it also is indicative, I think, of big changes that are coming.
I agree with you, and I always say that because the demographic of the population in the United States has changed drastically from what it was back in the, 50s, 60s, even the 70s.
That's right.
And I said, you made a very relevant point that because everything is changing, especially with the demographic and the color, the people we see, the skin colors, that things have changed.
Right.
And it's just like when they sang at President Obama's first inauguration celebration, the song of change is gonna come. And I think that puts fear in people because people normally, if they don't know what to expect.
Well, they don't know what the reality is going to be.
Right.
They don't know what their reality is going to turn out like. And I don't even think that they realize that they're threatened. I think that it's just a knee-jerk reaction to the paradigm shifting.
And it's just, I'll give you a good example. It's like the incident that happened on my show last week with the racial slurs. It's just like when people they fear something, change is imminent, it's coming, they can't control it. They're no longer in a position to keep people like down on the bottom. You're right, it creates that fear and that intense feeling of, I would say, insecurity,
yes.
The unknown. But what I think makes it so bad is that we as a country claim to be post-racial. We claim that we've healed, that issues don't no longer exist in this
world. Well, now, when you say we claim, I don't know who we.
Okay, let me correct.
We is.
Well,
you know, because is that I don't know a black person in my life that has ever thought that.
Let me stand to be corrected here. When I say.
Yes.
I'm saying the American society as a whole, and not
yes.
saying black people, but
right.
belief rather than, let me put it that way, that
yes.
we're post-racial, that the American society, that we are post-racial, the United States, and that the change that has taken place, and that everybody is more or less okay now, but we're not, and that's a fact of it, because you don't know if that belief is part of a denial, or if it's like a way of pretending that these issues no longer exist, but we're not post-racial.
Right. No, I absolutely agree with that.
We're not it's just when you look at some of the movies that you're seeing on television, in the movie theaters, The Help and Django, we know the history. We know what happened. Why aren't we seeing movies that are more progressive with regard to...
Well, I have less of a problem with movies like Django than I do with movies like Lincoln that don't sort of incorporate the very, very important and integral roles that black people played in in freeing slaves. So the erasure of that part of history, that very, very important, pivotal part of history, is more disturbing to me than, Quentin Tarantino getting people to say, the N-word a billion times in a two-hour period. We know what he's about, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I am saying that if you're going to put a movie out that's supposed to be, have historical significance, that's supposed to be true to what really happened, and you're erasing the people of color that were integral in making those changes happen, that's more of an issue for me.
But why do you think we're seeing movies of this nature? And Naima, jump in with this in this discussion. Why are we even seeing movies of this nature? Why? That is my biggest question. I don't think it's okay to be okay with them, because they do affect self-esteem of people in general, and I think they continue to perpetrate and keep these racist ideologies going on. And I think that's just an issue. Naima, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
It
seems to me the reason those types of movies are being made is because of who they're making them, who's making them, and who is it being marketed to. They're not making these movies with black people in mind or anyone that's not white in mind. They're being movies made by the majority ruling class for the majority ruling class, and they have never cared about us or given any consideration to how we were portrayed in the past. And I see it sort of going back to that, how it was like in Hollywood, during Hollywood's inception and before the Civil Rights Movement. I think that's why those types of movies are being made personally.
I find them offensive. What do you think about that?
Django, I haven't really seen it, so I don't know how offensive it is. All I know is what I can go on by what other people have said.
Right.
Like slavery, a good friend of mine said, he said, you know, slavery is not a spaghetti western, and it isn't something that should be taken lightly. That's pretty much how I feel about Django. As far as the help goes, I can see both sides of the issue because, you know, my great-grandmother was a maid, and so were some of her friends, and they spoke like those women in the movies. And then I was actually thinking about that movie today, like with how the white girl in the movie wrote the book and helped them get their voices out. Like, I know, like, on the surface, it seems degrading, but you have to remember this was a time when black people were very disempowered, and the only way you could really get your voice heard was to go through a white person or a Jewish person who was sympathetic
to your
thought.
Here's my argument with that. My argument is this. We know that. We know this has happened. I'm interested in seeing movies that are representing people of color in a progressive light know about history. I think everybody in America and outside of America, they know the history of what we've gone through. So my point is, and I don't go to movies, so let me just, number one, I'll get my feedback on movies from just talking to people in general. I just don't go to movie theaters. But I would like to see is a movie that shows, for once, black Americans in a progressive light, where we're not seen as always being the slaves, the maid. We're not seen as being the bad guy. We're not seen as being downtrodden or putting on a modern-day minstrel show where we always have to be laughing and slapping the hands and cutting up. You know, I want to see a movie. Let me give you a good example. I like to see a movie something, and this is not on the same lines, but remember the old movie You've Got Mail or Something's Got to Give. I would like to see...
Just people in regular situations, in their regular lives, do it, and it's not about how... Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. I think that if people want to do a historical movie that includes black people or black history in it, I'm going to say this, no, I'm not going to be thankful for that. That's not a gift to me when you do that. It is not a gift to me. This is your history that you created too. You had more, actually, control over that history than I ever did. So it's not a gift to me when you do a historical movie about slavery or about black people or about whatever. If you are going to do a movie like that, make it accurate. And if you're going to do a modern movie, make it not a modern-day minstrel show that is displaying black people in stereotypical ways. And I think it's a very simple request, and the fact that it's not a heard request, and the fact that it's not a request that's being followed out is just another way for Hollywood to say to black people, your voice doesn't count. Not even that request counts.
Right.
And so that's sort of my take on the movie. Now, the Nina Simone thing is like a whole other ball of wax to me.
You know what my issue is? I'm looking at this, let's say when we start looking at the movies, and we're going to have another show where we're going to talk about, you know, colorism in the film industry, but when you start looking at issues like with what these Gollywall dogs represent, and let's say we're looking at the Nina Simone issue, we're looking at the movie issues. I mean, everything, if you really sit back and really look at everyone and pick them apart individually, to me it boils down to the self-esteem and with people of color, especially with the movies, and we're going to move into Nina Simone. When you start looking at issues like this, I'm saying, okay, is this a strategy, tactic, or whatever you want to call it, to kind of, in a sense, tear down the self-esteem? Because here's my reasoning behind this. And, you know, feel free to disagree with me. But my point is, when I'm looking at movies like that, to me, it does do a lot for people's self-esteem, number one. The Etsy doll, that has a lot to do with people of color and self-esteem. Then you get into the Nina Simone issue, which is really deeper, and now we're looking at not only self-esteem issues, but we're back to that old, ugly, green-eyed monster of colorism.
Right.
So what I'm seeing in everything that's being done, whether it's subtle or right in your face, it's, in a sense, it's the self-esteem at the core. What do you think? And you think I'm too far? Is that too far-fetched?
No, not at all. It is about self-esteem. And also, for me, I see it as, like how you were speaking earlier about how when, you know, there's a paradigm shift going about and they feel threatened, I see things like that, like with the refusal to address the dolls and the thing with the colorism in the movies, like with the Nina Simone, as a way of sort of letting, that's trying to knock black people down the peg, like, you know,
right.
Like, hey, y'all getting a little too...
Know your, it's the good old know your place.
Right, know your place as in doing this stuff to remind, as a reminder, you know, like, look, this is what y'all was, and this is what, how we still see you. That's how I take it. Like, it's never, to me, when I look at an issue, I never just look at it as at the surface, because it's always more than what you just see. And for me, that's really what I take it is, know your place.
Right, and I would also like to add that, you know, when people are making movies, doing things like this that sort of ignore these pleas, it's really, these are pleas from people of color, the community, saying, can you stop, just stop abusing us and let us be, just let us be, let us develop into the people that we're supposed to develop into. I get very tired of people say it's all about intent. And that is the cherry on top of the insult cake, you know, intent doesn't matter. And they may not intend by making these movies. What they intend to do by making these movies is to make money. But the thing is that, you know, they don't intend to, I think, knock us down a peg. I don't think they intend to make our self-esteem lower. But I do think that they intend to not give a crap about how it affects us. And so we're left with the repercussions of their actions, and they're, you know, sitting at home in Beverly Hills counting their money. So, you know, it's no different than it was 100 years ago.
You know, and that's interesting. You're right. It's interesting. You know, and that takes us into Nina Simone. Naima, tell us in... You know, what is this Nina Simone issue about with the movie?
Well, the issue is about, well, as far as colorism goes, there are several issues with the movie. But as it pertains to the issue of colorism, it's about getting Zoe Saldana, who is tall and thin and has rather European-looking phenotype, they put her in blackface. Well, they say spray paint, and I call it blackface because it's darker than her natural skin tone. Up Afro wig, prosthetics, and fake teeth to portray Nina Simone when they could have gotten any number of available actresses who resemble Nina Simone more. And usually I don't really make a fuss about those kinds of things because that type of thing has been going on since they started making films. But because of who Nina Simone was and what she stood for and how the way she looked was a symbol of pride for her and a lot of other black people, I just took that to be the ultimate dismissal and insult for everything that she stood for. Because
it's a complete slap in the face.
It is. Now, what action have you taken about it?
Well, I started a petition on change.org. And I addressed it to Cynthia Mort and Jimmy Alvin. They're the casting director and the what do you call, the executive producer of the film.
And what was,
that's why,
did you get a reaction?
No, I didn't get any direct, any reaction from them at all. Cynthia Mort, maybe about a week after the petition started, she went on a few, did a few interviews. She didn't mention anything about the petition, but she did explain, you know, how she was using artistic license, and because the story is fake also, she was using artistic license with that, and she thought how Zoe could portray Nina in the way she needed to be and all sorts of crap. But there has been no direct response from anyone who has to do with the movie. Until today, Zoe Saldana did say something at a pre-Oscar party. I have a quote if you let me read it.
Sure, please. Yes, yes.
This is from a website called HipHollywood.com. It says, Hip Hollywood caught up with the actress at a recent pre-Oscar party where she told us how she dealt with the backlash and why she took the role. Quote, I guess what kept me from being hurt by the negative comments was that I'm doing it for my sisters and my brothers. Note that sisters with the AS and brothers with the AS. And I don't care who tells me I'm not this or I'm not that. I know who I am, and I know what Nina Simone means to me. Saldana told us that she is proud to be a Black and Latina woman and has no regrets about taking the role. I did it all out of love for my people and my pride of being a Black woman and a Latina woman and an American woman, and that's my truth. So that's
now,
what Zoe Saldana has to say about it.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you something that I also find disturbing with it. Back years ago with Lena Horne, and this is in the book, The Color Complex, this is in the original book, it's on page 148 in the book where Lena Horne's daughter described that there was a movie. Well, actually, she mentioned this in the biography of the Horns, that they had to put so much dark makeup on Lena Horne to make her match the skin color to portray a Black woman in a movie. That her daughter goes on to describe it as her looking like Al Jolson singing "Mammy." And that's when they had to call in Max Factor so they could make Lena look Black but not blacked up in that particular movie. And it's interesting because when we start looking at this Nina Simone issue and the fact that they use a lighter complexion woman to play this role. Now, what does this say to other young Black aspiring actresses who are darker complexion? In both of your opinions, what is this saying?
Well, to me, it says, I'm sorry, go ahead, Naima.
Oh, that's all right. To me, it says that, it sends the message that, yeah, that they're not beautiful enough to get the good roles in Hollywood. You know, you can be the sassy sidekick, you know, or you could be the abusive woman, the sapphire role, you know, you can do that. But as far as leading roles, forget about it.
Well, you know, and here's my question. Raquel, what was your take on that?
Oh, well, I was just going to say that, you know, to me it says don't even try. To me
right.
It says you're not wanted. And to me it says you're not of value in this town, mm-hmm. which is exactly what they're saying. I mean, there's no two ways about it. There's no way to misinterpret that.
Now, let me ask you this, Naima. What other possible actresses could have portrayed Nina Simone in this movie?
Well,
let me ask you this. I read an article somewhere, and I can't remember where now, where one actress was really upset about it. She was really hot. I don't know if she auditioned for the role or not, but I guess my bottom line is, did they actually have an audition process where women whose skin color closely matched Nina Simone's actually auditioned for this role?
I do not know, and I have not been able to find that out.
You know,
but I will do some more research into it. I looked into it a couple of months ago. I couldn't find out anything as far as the audition process.
Now, what type of reaction did you receive from the public in general about your petition?
Oh, I'm going to answer that question, but just to touch on the other point, I do know that the movie did not get the funding that it needed until they hired Zoe Saldana for the role. When it was Mary J. Blige, they had all kinds of problems getting financing. As soon as Zoe Saldana did it, the project got greenlighted.
Mm-hmm.
But the project, I've gotten mixed reactions from it, you know, and more of them have been negative than positive. The people who have been positive, you know, they've been great, but the people who have been negative, it's been all sorts of things from, oh, you're trying to tear down another black woman who's working, to, you know, it's crabs in the barrel, Willie Lynch syndrome, just all sorts of things. Anything that has to do with tearing down black people and black people not sticking together, I have had it directed at me and my team.
But
I think
that people lose sight, or maybe they're not even aware of the issue of how colorism has been an issue within our community, you know, going way back to the slavery time. I think that they're just not aware that what this represents, because when you start saying to black women that we're not going to accept you in this role in which you are going to play a dark complexion woman, when you start looking at commercials on television, and I mentioned this a couple months ago on my show, I'm not a television person. I don't really like to look at television at all. But what I started doing was keeping a log on television commercials and looking at black women and being represented, you know, on commercials. And what I began to notice was that when it was something to do, like with a cleaning product, we had browner-skinned black women represented. With the Kool-Aid commercial, we have a browner-skinned family, darker complexion family represented. But let's just take Dove soap for an example. When they have the television commercials, have you ever noticed a dark complexion black woman in that soap commercial?
No.
I have not.
And then, okay, with Dove, take a look at any of the other beauty products that you see on television, just even if it's just hair dye or mm-hmm. lotions for your skin. If you think about it, and I've kept a log, you very rarely see dark complexion black women in these roles on commercials. Then to me, when you have a young girl, let's say a 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old who's looking at television, and let's say she's dark complexion, and all this child sees on television is lighter complexion, a light brown, but she never sees anyone that looks like her.
Mm-hmm.
That is bound to affect this child's self-esteem in some shape, form, or fashion. I mean, do you agree with me, or am I? What do you think?
Well, I completely agree.
I mean, and then let me go ahead, Naima.
I agree also. That happened to me when I was a little girl. You know, I'm pretty dark-skinned myself. When I was a little girl, I used to wish that I was white or at least light-skinned like my cousins because I was a young child in the late 80s and early 90s, and, you know, light-skinned, that was it back then. And if you were dark, you got no love. And I was probably in college before I really started to appreciate myself for the way I look. So, yes, that's still very, it actually does have an effect.
And that's for somebody who goes to college. That's for somebody who's not mired, continues to be mired in that ugliness, you
right.
know, that keeps telling you're not good enough and you're not pretty enough and your hair is too kinky. You don't have good hair. Your grade of hair isn't good enough. You know, that's for somebody who actually has made it, you know, to a point where they can explore the world outside of their own. And for
right.
those of us who do not or are unable to do that, you know, it simply just gets passed down to the future generation.
And
that's upsetting. And I've also noticed in commercials that even when they have a darker skinned black person in them, it's usually a male. And they really try very hard to balance it out with the wife being of lighter skin or mixed. They don't ever, you know, say that, obviously, that she's mixed, but she looks, you know, mixed. And their kids, the little girl has, you know, easy-to-do hair, and it's curly and bouncy, and the little boy might take after the dad a little bit. So I think that there's a very interesting sexist aspect to where the color of your skin fits in. Like, it's okay. It's, you might be able to get away with it with having darker skin if you're a man, but if you're a woman, that's mm-hmm. not so pretty, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I find that I think maybe even more disturbing, because it that is infiltrates our communities even more.
It does. You're right. It really does, and it sends a loud message. Because, I mean, my concern, and I can remember, I can tell you, when I was a child growing up, and we had the little books in school. I don't know if your books had this, but we had Sally, Dick, and Jane in the books, and they were all white children.
Mm-hmm.
And we never saw black children in our school books. Now, when you went home with your parents, you know, you had your black books then. But my point is that with everything we see where it's represent, like, again, it represents white skin or close proximity to light skin as being the ideal, then this will affect a child's self-esteem as they start to grow older. And then when they turn into that teen, it's just like Naima noted, it took until she got into college to realize, you know, I'm beautiful. And
right.
I think right. what happens to the like you said, Raquel, what happens to those women who never make it to that level, who get into college, who realize, you know, once they start learning and they're broadening horizons that, hey, I am a beautiful person, I am a beautiful woman.
There's nothing out there that's telling them that. There is absolutely
exactly
nothing in the media, nothing in their neighborhood, nothing at all. You might get lucky and have parents that are aware and
right.
who have been taught and who have been educated about that sort of thing, but chances are that's not going to be the case. And so if you don't have exposure, if you don't understand your – and I don't understand why people don't get the fact that there are – black people who are just as unaware of their history as there are white people
that's
who are unaware of their history. And so, you know, you can't just assume or expect that somebody who's black understands why their world is the way it is.
I think that one way of attacking that issue and hopefully trying to correct it is by making sure that the curriculums in these elementary, middle, and high schools have a strong foundation in black history. Because, I mean, I'll give you a good example. Me teaching on a college level, I've run into students too many times who are totally oblivious to the trailblazers and torchbearers of the Civil Rights era. They're like, who's that? Oh, well, that happened. And I believe that, again, if we had a stronger foundation in black history when they're growing up, when they're younger and they're in school, I believe that as they get older, and, you know, this could just be my off-the-wall belief, as they get older and they grow into adults, then everybody's going to have some type of self-esteem issue, but not to the degree that it has with the effect on people of color.
I think it's so far beyond self-esteem, there has to be another word for it. It's almost like it's some sort of implanted brain bug or something like that.
It's in the DNA or something like
it. Yes, it's so ingrained. I mean, how can it not be after all of these years? How
because
can it not be the standard that you adhere to?
Because I think because of the fact that, number one, the race of the black Americans, the segment of the black American race who have embraced these colorism ideals and this European phenotype ideology, I think, number one, that's one issue, because it's been, you know, let me go back. We had the slavery, we went to the Jim Crow civil rights era. We got into the 60s. We have the black power movement, the black is beautiful movement. That concept is, you know, it's born, it's alive, it's doing what it needed to do. And black people are starting to embrace the beauty of the skin, you know, their skin color, their hair texture, their facial features. And then, boom, then it's kicked out. It's gone. And I think what's happened is that because the segment of the population who were able to make it as they had the, quote, end quote, arrive, mentality were the lighter complexion ones who I think maybe just believe that because of their light skin, and once again, going back to the close proximity to whiteness, because they believed they had arrived, and because historically they were the ones who had better opportunities economically,
right.
education, mm-hmm. and careers, I think what happened was that that became ingrained in that segment of the population. They begin to believe it, that they were superior to darker complexion people. So within our race, we still have this line down the middle that continues to separate and divide us. But my focus is that, okay, we know it's there, we know it exists, but I think what I'm trying to say is my concern is that this colorism issue can seriously destroy, and I don't think people understand the magnitude to the degree that it not only does it destroy families, but when you're looking at a young black girl who grows into a woman and her self-esteem is all, you know, I could say screwed up from thinking because she's darker complexion that she's not as good as someone who's light complexion who may have a better texture of hair or maybe a narrow nose or thinner lips, it affects her self-esteem to such a degree that this young woman actually begins to think that she's ugly, she's not qualified, you know, that she's not worthy of being loved. And then on top of that, add in children teasing children.
Right.
So,
right.
And then she grows into an adult, and you have a black man, her own race, saying to her, I don't date dark-skinned women.
Right.
And
not just a black man that she knows, but black men in the media, black men
right.
in music, black men on TV, who,
right.
who you know, will say... when they think nobody's hearing, you know, that they prefer to have, you know, lighter skin partners, and that they intentionally have children with women who are even a different race, or they make sure that if they're also black that they're much lighter. I mean, this is some old school, ancient stuff that we're talking about here. Where people used to not mix with the darker skinned folks and make sure that every baby came out lighter and lighter.
And yeah, and that's true, and that's what actually happened. You know, in the Reconstruction era and all the way up until now, it was that belief that light married light because they wanted to keep the bloodlines, the skin color light in the family, and that's what continued to happen.
Not only is it.
And in the color complex, they make mention of, I mean, all kinds of reasons and issues why they want to keep the color lines light. If you think about it, gang, I mean, look at what it has done to the self-esteem for some women. And here's another issue. When we start talking about the self-esteem, it's just not with darker complexion women. There have been issues where lighter complexion women were also ostracized and treated differently because they were not believed to be, quote, authentically, end quote, black. You know, you're so fair-skinned and you're so light, or you must be mixed with something, so you're not considered authentically black, so we're going to give you hell, too, and make your life a living nightmare. So it is going both ways, but I think it's more so with a darker complexion female having to suffer through all of that. What do you think?
Oh, most definitely, yes. Like, I've had light-skinned friends tell me, well, you know, I've had people tell me that they thought that I was stuck up just because I was light-skinned. I even had one friend, she had long, beautiful hair, and somebody, a dark-skinned girl, cut her hair with some scissors because she was jealous. But, like, even though they experienced that, overall, throughout society, their light skin sort of gives them an advantage as far as opportunities go because it's sort of like, you know, the good cop, bad cop sort of thing. And when it comes
right.
to black people, you want to deal with the light-skinned ones because at least they have some of us in them. You know, maybe they're more manageable or something. That's how I see that. But, yeah, it definitely goes both ways and is ignorant on both sides.
Yeah, well, you know, I could say that, you know, as a lighter-skinned woman, I'm mixed. I'm half white and I'm half black. And,
Hold that thought. Now, and this is going to be a good example. What experiences have you had with black, you know, darker complexion black people with your complexion color? Have you
I have been completely ostracized in my life. I moved around a lot, so that didn't really help. But for the most part, especially when you start getting into like maybe fifth and sixth and seventh grade, when the boys start getting crushes on you and stuff like that, you know, I would have, you know, black boys flirting with me and wanting to hang out with me, but kind of hating me at the same time because of the way I speak. But they were like really into the whole, you know, light skin thing. And then I would have, on the other hand, you know, all the black girls completely ostracize me because not just the way I spoke, but because the fact that I was, you know, a lighter hued person. And so there was really no place for me to be.
Did it affect? Did it affect your self-esteem?
Of course, it affected my self-esteem because you don't really feel as though there's anything beyond the color of your skin. You don't really feel as though there's actually a place for you to be because you're certainly not a white person, and you are not accepted by black people. I'm not saying all black people, but it was a pretty common occurrence for me. And I would say that it is it's important to point out that there are levels of privilege that come with the color of your skin. Of course, we know that people who are born white or passing as white have the most privilege of all.
Right.
But what Naima was saying before is absolutely true. The way that you carry yourself has something to do with the way that you speak. If it's more acceptable to the white white population, that makes life easier for you. But also, it's less threatening to people. The people who give you jobs, the people who allow you to go, you know, who interview you for your scholarships in school, the people who talk to you, even when you go to the doctor, you're going to get more information out of the doctor because they don't feel as threatened by you. And so that affects your health care. That affects the knowledge of your health.
Right.
It does.
And so, you know, this is very, very true. I'm not getting the same privilege as necessarily a white person would, but I do acknowledge and accept the fact that I have more privilege off the bat than possibly Naima does.
Okay, but then how does that make you feel?
Well, it makes me feel torn. It makes me feel like, you know, I'm not at the point in my life where I actually feel guilty for it. But, you know, it makes me sort of feel, it has opened my eyes to how the world works. And it has allowed me to see things from two different lenses.
What about you, Naima? How has your skin color, like, has it affected your self-esteem in any way?
Well, yes, it has affected my self-esteem greatly on both ends of the spectrum. When I was younger, you know, I really hated my skin. I hated the texture of my hair. You know, I wished I was lighter skin. I was like, well, damn, why did not get some of them white jeans from the Creole side of my family? But then when I got to college and I saw all these beautiful women when they were wearing their hair naturally and they were just embracing themselves, I was like, damn, I don't have to fit in. I can be me. And after that, I just took it and ran with it. And now, like, some of my friends, they say I'm arrogant. I'm like, no, I'm not arrogant. I'm just making up for all them years that I thought that I was ugly.
And you know what? I don't really think it would be considered arrogant if it were somebody who was white that wanted to grow
right.
their hair really, really long and keep it really, really nice and blonde and flaunt
right.
it and make it really pretty and do all kinds of pretty white people things to their hair. You know, it's
right.
not arrogance then. It's only arrogance when you embrace who you truly are and the features that you've been given because of who you are.
Now,
let me
ask you both this then. There's a study, numerous studies have been conducted Most recently, I think it was by Wade Romano Blue and I think Cachet and Cesario, in which the study results came back and said that research consistently showed that darker-skinned blacks were actually perceived, they were evaluated, and they were actually treated more in a more negative manner than lighter-skinned blacks were by both white people and black people. So it's like a darker-skinned blacks were always like being treated worse. But when we start looking at self-esteem, is it that treatment alone, as for you two as two black women, is it that treatment that you receive from black people as well as white people, is it that treatment alone that really begins to affect the self-esteem?
Well,
or is it just you within you when you look in the mirror?
I think the shade that you get from your own people is worse than what you get from white people. Because, mm-hmm. you know, they're white people, okay? We already know what our history is with us. Have no expectations of them to love us or embrace us or accept us. But it really hurts more when the people who look like you, the people who are supposed to, you know, understand your struggle, are right along with the white people telling you, hey, you're not beautiful, you're ugly, or you're stuck up, or, you know, you're not good enough, you're not one of us, whatever it is on either spectrum. I think it hurts more when it's coming from your own people, just like how if somebody, so a stranger told you, hey, you're a stupid B, like you really wouldn't care, but if somebody, if your mother or your father or, you know, somebody who you care deeply about told you that, then it would really sting, and I think it's sort of the same thing with that.
Well, let me ask,
I think that's exactly right.
Let me ask you both, the both of you this, with when you're talking about skin color, when you, let's say you first started dating, or when you first discovered you had a crush on a guy, like Raquel made mention of how the guys were after her and then at the same time they had issues with her. But when you started dating, did you ever go through any experiences because of your skin color in which a guy either wanted to be with you because of your skin color or because of him rejecting you because of your skin color?
Actually, I think that happened to me when I was in college. When I first started dating, the majority of the men that I have dated have been light-skinned because dark-skinned men, I live in Louisiana, dark-skinned men tend to pair off with the light-skinned women and vice versa. But when I was in college, there was a guy that I really liked, and he really liked me, and everybody else could see it. But then I found out about his family's history, and his family came from a family who, for at least the past two centuries, have been keeping it light. And sure enough, he got married not too long ago, and he married a woman who was lighter than him. So, like, I really do think that's the reason why he never, you know, really approached me seriously. All he would do is just flirt, 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 flirt. But when I gave him an ultimatum, you know, he'd stop all this flirting, keep do something, make a move, or quit, because I don't play like that. Then
what about you, Raquel? Did you ever run into any issues with dating with your skin color?
I'm a bit of a special case. I got married when I was 17.
Oh, okay.
So there wasn't any dating. My husband is white, but when we first started going out, I was 14, and none of this stuff was anything I thought of. I mean, my parents are an interracial couple, and I am a mixed person, and to me, I really tried. Well, I didn't even try. What I did was not. I was not aware. I was not nearly as aware as I am now about, you know, what my choice in mate could or would or should mean. It wasn't. You know, I mean, I had little experiences when I was in elementary school with the guys. You know, with the black boys liking me and at the same time thinking I was too bougie. But I did not, you know, have those college experiences because I was already married.
Let me ask you this. Were you ever attracted to black men
Oh yeah, yeah. I had crushes on all
now,
colors of people.
Now, Naima, you said that you were attracted to lighter complexion men, or those all only the men that you date. Is that your preference, or is that just how it just happens?
No, actually, my preference. I like men so dark that you can't see them when you turn the lights off. That is my preference, but they don't like me. And I'm not really the type to go after a guy. I just like who likes me back. And the light-skinned guys have shown me a lot of love over the years. I am their preference, I've noticed. And with the men that I date, they seek somebody who looks like me out. It's never like, oh, well, you know, she's a pretty girl. Like, ooh, no, she's a beautiful, dark-skinned sister. I got to have her.
Let me go back and rephrase it. How does it make you feel when a guy says, she's a pretty dark-skinned sister, I have to have her? Does it bother your self-esteem or anything?
It doesn't bother my self-esteem, but it does sort of, you know, make me feel like, kind of like, you know, an animal in the zoo, like, oh, she's so different. Let me, I got to have it.
That's how I felt when I was, when I was coming up, too. It was just, you know, okay, I'm going to go for this person because that's who I'm supposed to go for.
Right.
And I think it's really kind of an interesting juxtaposition between, you know, what I've observed in the white population versus the black population. The black population doesn't want to give, they don't want to stop talking about color, skin color. They don't want to let it go. They don't, you know, they just, and I'm not talking about in a way that's productive. I'm talking about in a way that's destructive.
Right.
Right.
And white people want to forget about it like it never happened, which is also destructive. And, you know, so that's something that, you know, that reminded me of when Naima was talking about, you know, and I don't think it's an insult. I think it's a compliment when that is the type of person that you're attracted to. And anytime somebody says that's the type of person I'm attracted to, that's a compliment to that person. And I think that's what it's meant to be. But I think that there's so much negativity surrounding skin color in our community, versus in the white community, it being something that it's almost like you're not allowed to talk about for fear of bringing up ghosts of racist past.
Now, let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on when it comes to self-esteem? Let's say there's a big issue now with black women where a certain segment of the population is going natural. They wear their hair, natural hairstyles. And then there's the women who choose to relax their hair and straighten their hair and wear their hair straight. And I had a conversation with a friend, I think it was Friday night, and we ended up in a big heated debate, which I always do with them when we talk about skin color issues. And her response to me was that she has a problem with women who relax their hair or lighten their hair because she's natural. And she believes that they're trying to be closer to fitting that European phenotype ideology by straightening their hair. And to me, hair is hair. I don't care how you wear your hair, it's yours. Do you guys think that that's an issue also with self-esteem? Like, why do we worry about hair?
Well,
another woman's hair, rather. Let me put it that way.
Oh, another woman's hair. Well, I don't, but I guess other people, they take their own issues, things that they think about hair, and they project them onto others. I think that's what's going on with that, because, like, my biggest issue was with my skin color more than anything else. As far as hair, you know, I used to have perms. I would cut it all off or wear a fade, get texturizers, whatever, because my hair is just an extension of how I express myself.
That's my belief. I agree with you. Raquel, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts on that are that, first of all, the black community has a very rich and important a tradition when it comes to black women and their hair. There is no dispute about that. Good, bad, or indifferent, it is a huge part of who we are. And I think that when I think the movement to go natural is wonderful and beautiful, but I also think that I think that it's really sad when we use issues like this to divide ourselves.
I agree.
And I think
good.
I think that the problem here is that we're not focusing on what the real issue is. And the real issue is this. We need to elevate to the same level natural black hair as we have elevated any other kind of hair that we like to do or add or however we like to have it on our head. I think it's really important to bring natural hair up to the same level as any other sort of hairstyle that black women like to wear, we use included, and so therefore there won't be an issue of whether you wear your hair natural or whether you don't. It's
right.
just going to be the way that you wear your hair, and you can change it anytime you want, because in the black community, there are very few privileges that we are born with, and one of the privileges that we have is to be able to have short hair one day and long hair the next day, and not have people question us about it, and not have people try to touch us or touch it or ask questions about it or find out, where it's connected or whatever that the case may be. Our privilege is to be able to wear our hair, at least in this country, however we want to. But we cannot tell people who are black women who are wearing their hair natural that it's ugly or it's unacceptable or you need to do something with it. That's where the problem is, I think.
Right. And I think that is a big issue, and I also think it's an issue with when the women who decide to go natural want to try and criticize women who continue to wear their hair straight or with weaves, because at the end of the day, my response to my colleague was that, we need to get past the hair issue. This issue that we're dealing with within our community is so much bigger than hair.
Right, and it's not that, and I want to rephrase, it's not as though I don't understand where women are coming from who wear their hair natural, who do not like women to straighten their hair or make it anything like the European phenotype that we were talking about earlier. I understand the point. I get it. But it's, I think that the issue becomes too diffuse when you start picking it apart and telling other black women that you're bad if you do this and you're okay if you do that.
I
think it's destructive.
I think that's when a lot of pettiness fits into the picture, and it really takes away from what the collective thought should be. What should be, let's stand on a united front, let's throw this skin color bias, this nonsense out with the bathwater, and let's move together, let's move forward as a race of people without having to make these distinctions based on our appearance. Because what happens is that, and I think this is the biggest issue why we see so many young women and even older women, black women, going through issues of self-esteem because they don't fit, what society considers to be beautiful or the ideal standards of beauty. And that's how, the self-esteem really gets damaged. But, I take it I'm on a different side with it, because from the time I can remember when I was younger, maybe this is because of the way I was, my attitude was I could give a rest, Tata, how you thought about how I wore my hair or my skin color. That never moved me with women. I could care less. But I'm finding more and more when I start having conversations with women, because as part of doing the documentary, I'm like interviewing women and talking to them, and all I keep hearing constantly is, but my hair, I don't understand why if I'm wearing a natural hairdo and I'm sitting there, my head is spinning and I'm saying, wait a minute, we don't care. I don't care how you wear your hair. It's a personal preference. But I'm hearing a lot of issues with self-esteem and hair.
Yeah.
And that
well, I think it all sort of goes to the whole idea that that black is ugly and white is acceptable and pretty. And I think it's as simple as that.
Let me give you a good example. I had two women together, one dark complexion and one light complexion. The lighter complexion woman, I guess it was a weave or a wig, was very long, very straight. The dark complexion girl had braids in her hair. We're having a great conversation until one of the lighter complexion girl looked at the other woman and said, "I don't know how in the hell you could walk around with your hair like that." And, you know, I'm going to have to run interference here, and this is not what I don't like doing things like this, but I had to instantly jump in the middle and, you know, correct her and say, what is wrong with her hair? But then it goes back to what she believed was beautiful in her eyes. She believed that a black woman with long, straight hair, which, you know, represented beauty. And she looked at the girl wearing the braids, and her response was like, you know, that's a slave hair, dude. That's outdated. We don't wear our hair like that anymore. And her comments, and, you know, and I'll keep it sweet on the air, but when I had to get in the middle of this, by the time it was all finished and resolved and I asked her to leave, the darker complexion woman sat there and cried.
Wow.
And,
right.
And she said that, and, you know, her whole life, she never dreamed that another black person would actually sit next to her and tear her apart in a manner that this girl attempted to do until I stopped it. But this woman was so devastated by this woman's thoughts of her appearance, her comments, what she believed was a ideal of what represented attractiveness or beauty. And the darkened complexion woman, her whole point was that I am being me. This is who I am. I am comfortable with my hair like this. I am comfortable dressing like this. But
well, I sort of feel like that this idea that has been perpetrated upon us by the white community for so many years, that if one person says it, then it means that's the, if one black person feels this way, that's the way all black people feel about it. Because, you know, it may as well be all people, right?
And now we've
taken that and internalized it for ourselves and said, okay, well, this is the way I feel about things. This is the way black people should be. Why aren't you on board with it? Well, maybe because I'm an individual and I'm not, you know, and I'm not in the same boat as you on that. And maybe I have my own thoughts and maybe I've got my own reasons for doing my own things. And so, you know, I think that that's just as harmful and just as silly as, you know, a black person saying, oh, wait, I can say the N-word because I've got a black friend and he said I'm okay to say it. That's the same thing to me.
That's right. You know, and I'll tell you, with working on this interracial colorism project and with me actually meeting, I've met so many people, ladies, until I've probably met enough people to probably fill, I would say, a basketball, court, a room, or more. And what I've noticed more and more through the interviews, and I'm actually taking, like, detailed notes of everyone that I'm interviewing, and what I'm beginning to notice more and more is that line that separates and divides us on skin color is very, very real. And
yes.
What I'm doing is we'll have conversations with, you know, two women of different skin colors together, and then I'll have them separate interviews. But, of course, I always let them know in advance, these are the type of questions I'm going to ask you. If you're going to be uncomfortable, then let's not do this. But when they agreed to come together and sit and talk about it, it's been very rare that I've had two women of different complexions sit there together and somebody's feelings not get hurt. And so my biggest concern was that a lot of this keeps going back to the self-esteem, because one person will say something, and this is the honest, you know, and I'm telling them, be as honest as you can possibly be with me. And in them being honest and answering questions or comments, what I'm finding out is that there's a lack of sensitivity for people's feelings or compassion. I don't know what you would actually describe it as, but it's a lack of it there. And that lack, and that I could care less about this person because she's dark, or that person because she's white, or I can tell you by the way she walked in this room that she thinks she's better than me because she's lighter skin, or she thinks because she's darker complexion and I'm so fair, she thinks I'm not all black, so she's just going to diss me instantly. And I'm sitting here, now these are younger women, and I'm sitting here saying to myself, this is unbelievable. I should be recording this stuff. But it keeps going back, ladies, to self-esteem. And it keeps going back to the fact that there's an issue where the self-esteem has been so severely affected by this colorism, by these colorism issues. It's like, at what point in time do you think we're going to realize that this is a total and complete waste of time when you want to sit?
Well, when we start breaking the generational, you know, chain of it, because, I mean, if you see how sometimes people speak to their daughters, you know, when you see black mothers yelling at their daughters, you know, when their mom's sitting on the couch and daughter sitting on the floor, and you got a comb and you got a head full of nappy knotted up hair, and mom's getting frustrated and daughter's crying, and there's no time for, you know, I don't hear a whole lot of, I'm sorry, we'll just, you know, I'm being really gentle, I'm really trying not to hurt you. It's sit down, shut up, and let me get this comb through your head. And you know, I mean, why are you going to be compassionate to some girl that you don't know, that just walked through the door, that you've already got preconceived notions about?
That's
when
right.
You're not even getting that kind of compassion when it comes to, you know, the very being of who you are when you're a child from your mom.
That is true.
Right.
Naima, what are your thoughts?
I feel the exact same way that Raquel feels, that it starts at home. Like, you know, I remember, well, my mother wasn't the rough type. She's always been gentle with my head, but I can remember, like, my aunts and stuff, and how they would pop me in the head for just moving when they had the hot comb in my hair, or, you know, yanking on my hair unnecessarily while they were braiding it, like they were mad that they had to deal.
Angry to deal with your nappy ass, and to sit your tail down and to stop moving. You know, and so it becomes sort of like this cute thing that people like to remember about their childhood, but it still does harm, I think.
I think it does. I think it affects self-esteem. If nobody tries to correct it, as they get older, it becomes worse, because there are, you know, stories, or you read even in the Color Complex and other books, where things like this, or whether it's a family member or a friend in school, even a teacher, treating that child differently or giving them a hard time because of, like, number one, the hair texture, the skin color. As they get older, it turns out to be a real issue, and that person, and it's noted in the, I can't think of the book, where the author noted in this book that they start to actually hate the blackness in them because of all the difficulties they've had to go through and receive, you know, deal with in life because of that. The Afrocentric features. But number one, let me ask you guys this. When did you both become aware of colorism?
I became aware of color. You mean colorism itself, or just,
you know, just like with the light skin, medium, dark skin dynamic, where people actually, where black people did treat each other differently based on their skin color?
Oh, I noticed it as a child because, you know, like, I'm the darkest of my parents' children, and even though I have never had any issues with that within my immediate family, you know, a lot of my first cousins are light-skinned because my grandmother is Creole. And so from a very young age, I got teased about being dark-skinned and stuff. Like, I'd have to say since I was about 5 years old, I was aware of it. Basically, ever since I started kindergarten and interacting with the outside world, I have been aware of colorism.
What about you, Raquel?
I would say that I'm not exactly sure of, you know, any specific time when I first became aware, but it seemed apparent at a fairly young age that skin color could provoke and alter the behavior of people. And I've witnessed and experienced direct and overt colorism, mostly within my own community. I've seen black adults treat their children unequally within their own families, and when one child has dark skin and the other has lighter skin, or when much of the black family has relatively good hair and one has, and I say good hair in quotes because I really hate that term, but and one has what I can only deduce as bad hair in quotes as well. You know, I've seen mothers call their daughters ugly names. Like I said, when they're when they're yanking that comb or that brush through their hair, I've heard people, cousins and brothers and sisters call the darkest one Bert. Burnt.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants burnt. Burnt doesn't taste. I don't like burnt toast.
Right.
It tastes bad to me.
Right.
Nobody wants burnt. Nobody likes burnt. Burnt is a negative thing, And so I've seen that all my whole childhood growing up.
Now let me ask you, when we start looking at beauty standards, there's like this belief, as we talked about earlier, the phenotypes are European phenotype. Afrocentric phenotypes as being not as attractive or pretty. And there was this belief that, the light skin has been considered appealing. And those with light skin and those European phenotypes are considered much more attractive and acceptable than someone possessing darker complexion and Afrocentric phenotypes. Has this European, white American's beauty paradigm, has that damaged Black American women's self-esteem and their self-image, the belief in this?
Yes, to me it has. The ones who adhere to it,
mm-hmm.
Yes, it has, because, it forces them to look outside of themselves to a standard that is harder for them to attain before they can feel like they're beautiful, instead of looking to, there isn't really a whole lot of just naturally beautiful, well, not naturally beautiful, but, Black women who embrace their natural beauty in the media for you to look to. So, I think it has. The ones who have internalized that hatred and who accept whatever it is that the media tells them, I think it has affected them.
What about you, Raquel? What are your thoughts?
I think that the fact that if a Black person has white friends and it's a beautiful sunny day outside and they all decide to go to the pool, but that Black person cannot go in the pool because they feel like they're going to get their perm messed up and they don't want to have to deal with that later, or it's the chlorine's going to make their hair fall out because they got chemicals in it. I think that is example enough of, the effect, just the everyday effect that kind of thinking and that kind of impact that has.
Well, let me ask you, how are darker complexion women, how are they treated disparately, like in the media, in the music industry, from what your perceptions are?
From my perception, I think that the worst treatment is no treatment at all. I think
mm-hmm.
the worst treatment is no representation of the huge segment of our society that exists. And I think it speaks to the silence and the invisibility of that part of our population as a country, anyway. I think it all speaks volumes.
What about you, Naima?
Yes, I feel the exact way. It does speak volumes. She hit the point on that one, underrepresentation of darker skinned women. That hurts more to me, even with them being seen as the mammy or the sapphire role, because if you're not seeing them at all, it's like, oh, we don't even exist. And that to me is more damaging than, the stereotypical role.
Now, let's look at an example. Let's say you have a darker complexion woman who makes it big in corporate America. And for whatever reason, she makes it big and she's making the money. Good career, good opportunities. And suddenly let's say you know this person really well. And then suddenly she starts to change, where she starts being negative and talking negative about anything to do with Black people or Blackness. On top of that, she starts to bleach her skin, where she normally wore her hair, let's say, in a nice, relaxed style. She starts just doing a complete change in everything about her. And what's really at the tip of the iceberg, remember, is that she's darker complexion, she's made it in corporate America, and now she's doing a complete 360 with everything about her. Whereas, let's say, after a few months or years or two, you start to notice that she's completely removing any association with black or blackness from her. She stops associating with her family. She will no longer date black men. What does this message send to other black women who are trying to get into corporate America? What do you think?
Or
could it be nothing to do with corporate America?
It could be maybe, you know, she's just trying to do her best to fit into her surroundings, and she feels that maybe if she toned down her blackness, she would be a little more accepted at the at the workplace.
That's the key. I was looking for one of you to say that. Good. Well, Raquel, what is your take?
I would have to agree with that. I don't see why somebody who's already gotten to the point where she's gotten to would then all of a sudden try and alter her appearance in that way. But I do understand that Naima said made the most sense to me.
Do you believe that, well, let me ask you this then, when a woman is treated disparately, mainly because of her skin color, whether it's light complexion or dark complexion, but she's being treated differently, what does that really do to her self-esteem, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it sends a message to her that who she is as a human being, who she is as a person, a thinking being, is of no consequence, and that the external is the most important thing in the world. And that doesn't end with colorism. Of course, it goes to sexism as well. But in terms of colorism, you know, I mean, of course, I think that it negatively, very negatively affects the self-esteem of women, and it has. And it has for me, and I know that it has for Naima as well. You know, it affects you, certainly.
Do you think that lighter complexion women have been treated disparately in, like, the media or music industry?
Yes.
Naima, what do you think?
Yes, I do. I think black women, period, have been treated disparagingly in the media. Dark skin, light skin, we all don't get our fair justice and a fair shake in the media. But it does seem like it's more tilted towards the darker end of the spectrum. But then, you know, the depictions that you do see of light skin women, some of them are better, but a lot of them, they're not any better than the depictions that you see of dark-skinned women, because they're not white women.
That's true.
Right.
Point.
I see in you know, a lot of times in like music videos and stuff like that, that lighter-skinned women will often be featured and will often be in some of the most compromising positions, because that's the kind of broad you're supposed to be going after if you're a real man. And so I think that, you know, it's not anything new necessarily in terms of the sentiment, but I think that's one of the ways I've seen people with my kind of skin color be portrayed in music videos.
It's true. I've seen a big disparity there. Let me end with this. Pearson Trommel, in 2010, in her study, she noted that, and I'll put this in quotes, black women have had to develop survival strategies such as independence and assertiveness that prevent them from internalizing negative messages from the dominant culture. And at the same time, they have to foster and maintain a strong inner sense of self. My question to you, Raquel, is how do the Etsy dolls represent a negative message for black women from the dominant culture?
It says, you know, in it says once again that that even though we have we prohibit items like these, we say that we don't allow racism, we say that we don't allow discrimination of any kind, disparaging items, that you're not really included in that group, and that you once again are will not, cannot be represented, and we will not acknowledge you.
Naima, okay, with regard to the Nina Simone issue and the selection of a lighter complexion woman to play Nina Simone, what type of negative message, or if it, you know, does it send to dark complexion black women?
Well, it sends to, in my opinion, it sends the message that women who look like Nina Simone aren't beautiful. And if you do something great in this world, when it comes time to make a movie about your life, they're going to go out and go get a beautiful, lighter-skinned woman, because according to the majority culture, they don't... You're not beautiful. You're ugly. That's the message that it sends. And the
exactly.
only way you can ever be seen as beautiful is if we get a lighter person and put some jacked up makeup on them. That's the message it sends to me.
Well, how can black women, mothers, aunts, cousins, everyone, how can we instill positive self-esteem, self-love, and pride in our daughters, our nieces, our grandchildren about their skin color? I mean, what can we actually do to, you know, to make sure they understand, regardless of whether you're light, medium, or dark complexion, that and regardless of their, you know, their facial features, lips, nose, and everything, what can we really do to send that message loud and clear? You know, have that self-esteem, self-love, and pride. What can we do?
Well,
educate.
Right. Yeah. And to me, as far as your children go, just every day tell them that you're beautiful. And no matter what anyone tells them, whether it has to do with their skin or their hair or, you know, the gap in their teeth or whatever it is that somebody will tell them, like, hey, you have this feature and you're not beautiful. If you reinforcing them in their heads every day, like, you are beautiful, you are worthy, there is nothing that in it, one on the outside will be able to come and tell them that it was destroyed it, because, hey, my parents, my guardians have told me that I'm beautiful and that's all that matters. And they'll take that with them and carry it with them as they get older.
Okay, my final question, ladies, is what can we as a race of people do to help eradicate colorism within our communities?
I think that there's not really anything that can be done until we decide that we are going to understand, learn and understand where we came from and how we got to where we are today. Because I think that once that is understood, that we are going to be able to see the reason why we see things through the lens that we see things through. Why do we think we're ugly? Why do you think that you need to keep it light? Why do you think that that you don't want to be with that black that darker skinned black man because you don't want to have a nappy headed kid, you know? And so you need to understand the reason for the sickness. You need to understand. I mean, this is just a symptom of it.
Right.
You need to go to the cause, mm-hmm. and the cause is going to be found in learning where we came from and learning why these bugs have been implanted in our brains that tell us for generations and generations that we are ugly and we are unequal to and we are lesser than. And that's not just for women, that's for men. And we also need to make sure that we do just as Naima said and reinforce those positive things, that these positive mantras that we need to tell our children and that they need to start telling themselves. You tell it to them every day, they're going to start telling it to themselves. And then that, in turn, is going to breed a new generation of people who can view themselves through a more healthy lens.
That's true. I agree. Naima, what are your thoughts?
Raquel just stole all the words right out of my mouth. I was getting ready to say the exact same thing. Everything that she said, I agree that we have to understand where we were to understand where we are now. And then after we get to that understanding, work on healing, leaving the things in the past, stop using, you know, our skin color as a litmus test, you know, for our blackness, because it's so much more. First of all, what is blackness? And second of all, just stop doing these things for each other. So it's understand where we were, you know, and find some kind of way to bring about a catharsis or some kind of healing so we can move past it.
I agree. Thank you both so very much. And before we end, what I wanted to do is, Raquel, for your petition on Etsy, how can people find that petition and participate?
Well, you can go to change.org and go ahead and look up Tell Etsy to Stop Profiting from Prohibited Items. The petition ends actually today. So if you are quick enough, you can probably sign it. I believe that it just shuts down after today. I've never done a petition through them before, so I don't really know how they operate. But it is over today. So change.org, tell Etsy to stop profiting from prohibited items.
Okay, great. And Naima, how can anyone sign up to with your petition on Nina Simone, if you still have it going?
Yes, I still have it going. And you can go to change.org and just type in Nina Simone petition, and it should be the first search result. And
great.
You can also go to facebook.com/ boycott the Nina Simone movie.
Great, excellent. What I will also do, I will send that out through my WordPress blog on Twitter and Facebook, so that everybody can also find you. Ladies, is there anything else you would like to add to our show tonight?
No, just thank you very much for having me.
Yes, I want to thank you both. Thank you for your time, your wonderful energy, your thoughts, the conversation, and I look forward to having you guys on my show again and talk about other issues affecting colorism in our community. Ladies, thank you both, and have a great night.
Thank you.
Okay, thank good night.
You. Good night.
What I would like to do is add on for our ending, my ending comments tonight. There was a good show and great comments with Naima Raquel. But what I wanted to say to everybody is that, you know, at times I often question the state of Black America with regard to colorism, you know, as an insidious issue that actually continues, you know, it separates and divides Black Americans. And just ask yourself, or consider this, do you ever wonder why we're victimizing ourselves in the millennium with these colorism issues? It's time that we, you know, come together in a united front and try and work together to eradicate colorism. We have made significant progress as a race, but if we continue to, you know, we still continue to struggle with racism issues. We are continuing to struggle within our race with colorism. In 2013, I think the agenda of Black America must include continued discussions on colorism and how we as a race must work together to eradicate this insidious monster that continues to separate and divide our community. On the sidebar, everybody, with regard to self-esteem and loving yourself and making the most that you can out of your life, you know, take some time today. Evaluate you. Evaluate your inner circle. Develop goals for yourself. Set milestones to help you achieve your goals. Consider the fact, you know, what are your plans for the rest of your life? What are your educational goals, your career goals, even your personal goals? You should write them down and begin working on them. And if you're not attending college, start searching for college today. But like the president noted, President Obama noted, you know, choose carefully and select a school that will, quote, give you the best bang for your buck, end quote. that's from the president, and start today and begin living up to the promise within you to be all that you can be, because you actually owe that to yourself. And as Joel Osteen, I love Joel Osteen, he stated, God, and I'm saying this in quotes, quote, put a dream in your heart because he knew that you would be able to achieve, end quote. You know, only you can turn your dreams into reality, listeners. And as Black Americans, we have so much potential and opportunities to become who and or what we want to be in life. You know, evaluate the people you allow to sit on your front row. If you are in, as people around you who are not trying to be upwardly mobile and make a change for the better in their life, and you're trying to do that, it could possibly hold you back. So don't settle. And just remember this, regardless of your skin color, your hair texture, or your facial features, you know, begin today, look in the mirror, and acknowledge yourself as God's masterpiece. And that's what Joel Osteen always talks about. You know, as such, you have to look at yourself as being beautiful. See you when you look in that mirror and just say to yourself, I am beautiful. Remember, you have a purpose and a mission in life, and it's first and foremost to love you, and loving yourself will actually help to build a positive self-image. It'll build your confidence. Your self-esteem will go up 100%, and you will actually begin to sparkle like a diamond in the sunset. You know, take pride in the color of your skin, the style you choose to wear your hair, the texture of your hair, the image that you project should reflect confidence and comfort in who you are. When someone makes an issue about your skin color, your facial features, that is their problem. It's not yours. So don't take it on. And remember what I said, it's their problem. They have to deal with it. So don't let someone else's opinion about your appearance affect who you are, who you want to become in life. You have enough on your plate being you and living up to your own standards. You know, the bottom line is, everyone, why waste time trying to live up to someone else's standards or ideals of what constitutes beauty or who you should be? You know, what I do with people like that, you mark them insignificant and move on with a smile on your face. And I'll share this with you, everyone. When I walk into a room, my presence commands attention. And it's not because I'm Dr. Culbreth, but it's because I am confident and I'm comfortable in who I am and of my appearance, because I view myself as being God's masterpiece, and you should do likewise. If you take that approach, then these issues with colorism or someone making a distinction about your skin color, where they're saying you're too dark or you're too light or you're in between, and they just want to, you know, ostracize you because of the color of your skin, you don't need people like that in your life. Trust me. At the end of the day, remember, you are God's masterpiece. Carry yourself like that. I guarantee you, your life will be beautiful. And just imagine how beautiful the world would be if we all sparkled like diamonds in the sunset. Until next week, remember, dare to be different and dream in color. Our episode next week will focus in on Black men and colorism. Good night, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to The Dynamics of Colorism with your host, Dr. Donna Maria Culbreth. You may contact Dr. Culbreth at 1-800-905-2136. You may email your questions to drculbreth@colorismproject.com. We're looking forward to you tuning in next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Until then, remember, dare to be different and dream in color. This is Dr. Culbreth, signing off for The Dynamics of Colorism. Good night, everyone.